Welcome to the podcast, Entrepreneur Perspectives, building and protecting your business one podcast at a time, a CadSource family production. In this episode, we discuss coffee, helping children, and educational psychology. Our guest today is Lori Adachi, licensed educational psychologist. Lori is located in Santa Clarita, California, where she runs her private practice. She has over 30 years of experience and opened her practice in 1996. Lori works with children and adults with all types of learning issues, including language disorders, ADHD, severe emotional disturbances, physical handicaps, autism spectrum disorders, and other developmental delays. Her knowledge of her craft were on full display in our chat. Her actions prove she has a heart of gold and truly loves what she does. And with so much to talk about, let's get right into this episode and welcome Lori Adachi. Lori, you are a big coffee lover. What is your favorite type of coffee?
Probably anything with espresso. I would say a nice latte or a cappuccino, but a cappuccino has to be in an actual ceramic cup. It can't be in a paper cup. So if I'm stuck to a to-go, it's going to be a latte.
It's very particular. And I think that's important. When you like something, Yes. You understand what you like and how you like it. And you can't deviate from that plan. When did you get so into coffee?
Oh, goodness. I would say in my early adult years, I wasn't a coffee drinker at all. And it's probably when I started working in schools that it became a mainstay in order to just keep going.
Yeah.
And going,
yeah.
And going, and going.
That's perfect. I remember I didn't drink coffee, and I have three kids now, and my oldest is my son, he was born, and I think that was the moment I was like, I need coffee now, and I need it, you know? So there's always a reason where someone gets into it, and then, you know, you hear a lot about it in the wine industry or the beer industry or types of food, and people are very particular about it, and I'm always fascinated because they have such genuine interest, and we met, and it's been a while now. I remember one of the first things we talked about is coffee and how coffee is really important. Like, it became important in your school, and so you can keep going, like you said. But you enjoy that cup of coffee, and I think you talked about like enjoying a cup of coffee to when you're chatting with a friend or you're chatting with a client or you're just reading a book on a nice day and looking out the window and having a nice warm cup of coffee next to you. Is it like, when I say all those things, I know you talk about it a lot, but coffee is important to you, right? I mean, it's more than just drinking a cup. It's very, you know, you have a specific way that you want to take your coffee, right? So it's become an important
Absolutely.
Part of who you are.
Absolutely. It's replaced comfort food. It's now my comfort coffee. But even to the point where I have a coffee set up in my office, first thing when you hit the door, that looks inviting. And it's just a way to kind of welcome people in to my office. I have it in my house also. So I welcome people in that way also. And it's funny because in my first office, gosh, more than 20 years ago, we had a little coffee nook with just flavored coffees going in a regular pot just to kind of fill the air and give a sense of comfort. You know, and that was way before the whole excitement of the little, you know, setting up your little coffee nooks and all of that. So, it's definitely been a mainstay.
It's important. I mean, you can go into a dentist's office now and they'll have video games for the kids because, like, what kids want to go to the dentist's office? Well, now they're going to the dental office and they have video games there and they have, you know, they might have coffee or whatever it is that's inviting because your people are coming to you and they're opening up a little bit. And it's mm-hmm. not to get someone to say something they don't want to say. You're just wanting to understand truly what they're thinking and what's going through their mind and how you can help them out. And having something that's inviting like coffee, I think goes a long way. I also think it's important because if I like coffee and you like coffee, well, we can talk about coffee. And then we talk about coffee and now we can get into things that maybe I really need help with. So I think it makes a lot of sense. And we see it. We see it in your social media pages, right? You have pictures of you drinking coffee or pictures of the office, the nook that you talk about where people are drinking coffee. You know, they have the ability to come to your office and have a cup of coffee with you. So,
or a new cup that I've bought.
And
love
the new
to
cup
share
that,
those too.
So do you go out? Let's just stay on coffee for a second. Do you? So you have your place. Do you? Are there places in Santa Clarita or places that you go around your town that are your favorite coffee spots, or do you like to brew your own coffee at home? How do you look at that?
You know, I really do enjoy a good Starbucks latte, especially around the holiday times. I love the holiday flavors, though I can't drink them all the time or I would be gaining all kinds of weight. But my absolute favorite are in any town is to seek out the little mom and pop type coffee shop and just to kind of soak in something that's about the locals. So that's always what I look for. And here in Newhall, we have a place called Honu Coffee. And that's a nice place. It's just within walking distance where I can go sit down and meet somebody over there. So I really do enjoy that.
Well, I think it's important that you find it, whether it's coffee or gardening or sports or whatever it is that you are into, I think it's important to have those interests to say, oh, it's an enjoyable walk to go get my cup of coffee, and it just keeps you going. And I think it's important that if I'm seeing you or my kids are seeing you, or that you're in a good place, that you're right for that conversation. And I think that's part of it, right?
Yo, absolutely. Yeah.
So you were in school and now you have your own business. Tell us about, you know, the journey of you starting your own business and even wanting to start your own business in educational psychology.
I worked in schools as a school psychologist. I started off with the severely handicapped population and then moved into general education, working with the more mild to moderate needs of students. And I think I did that for about 9 years. And I just had a hard time balancing what is right for the student and the student's family and what is good for the school. And my training and my orientation had always been, this is about the kid, and I needed to do what was right for them. So it was hard for me to try and balance that line. So I felt the tug probably about midway through those 9 years to do more for the individual. And it started off as just part-time, and it grew. And then I just decided I had to take that leap of faith and go into a private practice of working for students and their families. And so now I work on the opposite side of the table from the school people, though I am a very, I come from a place of being very cooperative and wanting to make things work, but I can give the parents all of the advice that I had to be careful when I was actually working in the school.
Yeah, so you advocate for the if you're talking to the schools, you're advocating for the child, for the family, but you've been on both sides of it. So you have an understanding of what it's like to be on the school side of it and what it's like to be, you know, the family that's trying to get their child help. And you saying it's all about the kid. I couldn't agree more because there's just so many politics or whatever that goes into on the school districts. I mean, there's just so many people that they have to answer to, but they need, they need an advocate like you. Because they're being thrown in so many different directions, and it's just confusing. And families, I think, have a hard time keeping up as to what do I do? I don't know. I'm not a professional. I don't work in educational psychology. I mean, you studied for years to get to where you are today. They need someone like you, but it's often not known that they need someone like you until it's later on in the game, right?
Right, right. I have a sister who is developmentally delayed. And so early on, I saw my mom going through the system and trying to deal with that. And then it came later on when she would try and read a report about my sister's functioning, and it was hard for her to interpret or understand or to get through it without crying. And now I can try and gear things to a more understandable level for those families so that it makes more sense and that I keep it toned out of the educational jargon and into lay terms and just make it something that's more, it makes the family a little bit more of the team member as opposed to just kind of sitting back like in the headlights, you know?
Yeah. So how does the school, so the family shows up and they have the child and they're having their meeting, and all of a sudden there's someone like you that's either there in the moment or a part of the process, and they know you're part of the process. Is that well received by the schools?
Most of the time, early on, I work now in private practice in the area that I actually worked as a school psychologist. So early on, I would say most of the school psychologists and staff knew who I was. And so it was fairly comfortable to go in. I've been out of the school so long that it's a whole different staff now. But I tend to go in and sit back and try and just listen and not run things, because it's not my meeting. And that way I can allow them to do their thing. And if the parent's okay with it, great. That's where I want it to be. But if the parent has questions, or if they're feeling uncertain, or they don't know what they don't know, and they need somebody to help fill in those gaps, then I'm there.
And the families, I mean, I would imagine there's a lot of people that could use your services, for whatever different reason. But families are maybe unaware that someone like you exists to help them out. We've spoken and worked together for a long time, so we understand where you would fit in. But families might not know. Like we said before, they're busy. They have other things going on, and they're certainly trying to help their child out. But it's like, mm-hmm. I didn't even know you existed, Lori. And how do families go about learning more about this? I mean, certainly you have, and we'll talk about this. I mean, you have efforts, to put yourself out in front of people on social media, or just, word of mouth, or being in the school districts and having conversations. But, how can families go about it? Because there's just so much thrown at them when they go to school, and it's like, it could be lost, right? The child mm-hmm. could be in class and they didn't even realize that the kid was slowing down, or I'm sorry, wasn't keeping up until it was too late. And it's never too mm-hmm. late, right? Possibly, but it's September and the kid's kind of passing by, going along. And next thing you know, it's April, the school year's about to end. And now they find out that, third grade didn't go as well as it could have gone. What are they supposed to do?
Yeah. First ask questions. Don't just assume. It didn't used to be this way, but I've had to get on to the bandwagon, Googling these kinds of things. Unfortunately, as far as educational psychologists, my actual license, there are relatively few of us in the state of California. I don't know how many there are across country, but in the state of California, it's a fairly low number in comparison to other things like marriage family therapists or clinical psychologists, things like that. And then within our numbers, there's a much smaller group that's actually working in private practice. So you're right. I think that there is a certain amount of searching that you have to do, but ask the questions, because there are people out there. And even if you get to hopefully they know something and they can also help to guide you into a different direction. I run into that all the time, that people say, I had no idea. Or they go to somebody that's, two towns over, and then they come back and talk to me and go, I had no idea that you were in my backyard. It's like, man, I'm doing everything I can to try and get it out there.
Right. But you're only one person. It's hard. Do you think the schools have a responsibility to talk about these external resources, or are they so inundated with things that they have to do that would just, how could they even possibly?
They do to a certain extent. A lot of schools will have lists of, people, depending on what the issue is. The biggest thing that I see, though, for people that do testing, and I do both. I do the therapy piece, but I also do the testing piece. Most of the time, they feel like they can rely on their own assessment. So, it's kind of awkward for them to be recommending somebody outside when they do assessments themselves. So that gets a little bit more I guess, a little bit harder to try and navigate and figure that out. Doctors, a lot of times pediatricians, they know and they'll make recommendations. So, you know, speak up to the people that you already know and see if they can give you some direction also. Because there's only certain times that a school is going to do assessment. A student has to be functioning in one, at least one academic area that's outside of the instructional level of the classroom. So it's not the struggling child, it's the, you know, in one area beginning to fail child. And that's not always what parents want to wait for.
Right. Well, you said something that's interesting about they're doing their own testing inside the schools. So there's this uneasiness possibly of saying, well, let's bring in someone outside. Let's bring in an expert on the outside. But you said something earlier on in our conversation. You said this is all about the kid and you want to make it about the kid.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, to me, it's like there's this, you have to have some sort of humbleness about it to say, maybe I'm missing something, so let's bring in that expert. No different than if you met with someone and you said, you know what, I don't think this is something that I can help with, but I do know someone that I think can help with it. And maybe it has nothing to do with, maybe the core issue isn't related to their learning ability. Maybe it's something else, right?
Right.
That you would be, let's bring in that person, because again, going back to your core message, this is about the kid. And I think the schools need to realize that, it sounds like to me, not everybody, and we're speaking generally, of course, that sometimes there is a time to bring in someone else because I just might not be seeing everything that I need to be seeing.
And I think in many cases, a school psychologist is thinking, well, I've got the same training that the educational psychologist has. And many school psychologists actually may have their license as an educational psychologist. They just practice within the schools. But that may be true in one aspect. But the way that I look at testing is in much more in depth than what they have time for in the schools. I'm looking at the student who falls through the cracks. And I know when I was in the school district, I hated to hear that my kid falls through the cracks because I thought, you know, I would get my back up and go, no, we do look out for them. That's not true, because we, in the schools, we are looking for students that are going to qualify for special education, which means they do have to be functioning outside of that instructional level of the classroom. Well, just because they're struggling doesn't make them completely outside that level. So they're not going to get tested. Also, in addition to that, a number of years ago, I went through having further training in school neuropsych. So I do assessments with a little bit different bent on understanding the way that the brain works and develops. So I have a little bit, more than a little bit, additional expertise, I guess. But the schools have to be concerned about cost liability and those kinds of things. And they're very limited in their resources, and they're going to be very cautious about how they make those kinds of recommendations.
No, that's right. And I think you said it too, like the time, how much time do we have? You know, we have five other kids in line. We have to get to all of them. We can't spend hours working on this one child. We have to move on. And that's where someone like you comes in. But, you know, there's two things I want to touch on. I'll start with this one is the way we're talking, a lot of it is around public schooling. But you're working with kids that are both public school kids and private school kids. There's pros and cons.
Public, private, the charters,
yep.
Homeschool,
oh, yeah.
Everything.
Okay, so a lot of the stuff we've talked about seems to be, you know, talking to school districts as public schools. But, I mean, you're like you said, you're seeing all of these kids. Private schools necessarily might not have the psychologist, educational psychologist on staff or someone who's trained in that area, they are more likely, right, to send them
out, yes,
to someone like yourself and understand.
And I do have private schools in the area that do send parents to me.
Okay. And there's a lot changing with the school because you mentioned charter schools. I mean, there's homeschooling. I mean, there's all sorts of, just in Charlotte, North Carolina alone, I mean, it seems like there's a new charter school every single year. And there's a wait list to get, mm-hmm, into those charter schools. The private schools we saw had, from what I know, and I don't know the exact numbers, but since right before the right before 2008, probably like the year 2007 for the recession, that time period was the last time they had this amount of applicants. After that, it obviously went down because of the cost, all that kind of stuff. But people are trying to get out of the public school systems in many respects. Not to say that they're all bad, because they're not. There's a lot of great public schools, but there's a lot going on in there. The school system is changing drastically, and it's hard to keep up. And more than ever, I think we need more advocates. And we need more advocates for anything that we're doing, especially in our learning.
Absolutely. I would agree.
Okay.
It is a changing market for sure.
So the other thing that I see is there's big words being tossed around. And it's in any industry, we hear, you know, industry jargon and letters and numbers being thrown together. And you're like, what does that mean? So I'll throw two out at you right now. And it's 504 and IEP. So someone saying, like, well, what's a 504 and what's an IEP? Unless you've gone through it, or unless you know someone very closely that's gone through it, you have no idea what they're talking about. And it sounds like, oh, my goodness, what is wrong with my child? And it's not that at all. But those words are being tossed around in the school districts all the time. So, again, this is sometimes your educational psychologist. You're educating families and kids and people about what all of this stuff means and why it could be a benefit, right? So I'm sure you hear that all the time. What's a 504? What's an IEP?
Yes, absolutely. And an IEP is under your special education kind of rights. It has to do with kids that have a learning disability, or it could be a developmental delay on the autism spectrum. It could be emotional delay or emotional disturbance that's happening. It could be a physical problem that's keeping a child from being able to learn. You know, it could have to do with blindness or deafness or hard of hearing or limited vision or, you know, all these different levels of disabilities. Or what I actually prefer these days is more of the different abilities, because that's really what it is. A special education document is what an individual education plan is, or an IEP, and it's supposed to be written up with goals that are directly related to the need of that child. That's why the individual part of it, so that even if they're, say, in a general education classroom and they have support in language, speech, or occupational therapy, or physical therapy, or adaptive PE, or resource specialist support, that they have a specific thing that they're working on. Usually they have more than just one goal, but something that they're specifically working on. Or it could be a student who is in a special education classroom, and then they have goals maybe in every area, so that they have very specific things that they're working on with ways that are meaningful to that child in presenting the curriculum. And so that's the whole idea of the IEP. The 504 is completely different in that it is not under the umbrella of special education. It is under the umbrella of our civil rights, so it is not education specific. It is the civil rights that we all have to have equal access. So it could be that individual that needs to have an elevator to be able to get up the stairs or the ramp or various other things in order to be able to access whatever it happens to be. In the school setting, it's a plan for the general education teacher usually to follow, saying that maybe the student needs some extra time in order to complete tests. Maybe they need a quiet environment. Maybe they always need to be in the front of the class. Or maybe they need someone to help them take notes because they can't keep up with the note-taking. Something like that. They can still benefit from the curriculum in that general education classroom, but they can't keep up if they don't have something tweaked a little bit. That's called an accommodation. It's not a modification. That's completely different. If you're changing something, because that totally messes up grading and all that kind of stuff, so that's different. Accommodation just means you're tweaking it a little bit to meet the learning style or the learning needs of that child.
Okay. I mean, just you talking about this, it's comforting, as I have three kids, but if I were a parent of any kid, it's just important to know that there's people out there, and I mentioned this before, that you have this understanding and a easy, just ease of explaining it to me and to the listeners. And I think that's important. And that's why we love talking to people like yourself, because you're helping your clients and you're helping it, but you're helping the market that's out there. And people need to understand these things, and I think that's important. Which goes to the point of, we mentioned this before, of marketing and getting your voice heard and getting out there, because you truly have something to share. And it's not about, it is, yes, you need clients and you need to stay in business, and that's any business. But at the same time, you're trying to help the market. And if you could post, let's just say, that little snippet, that little video about what is an IEP and what is a 504, and let's say that went on Instagram, and a family saw it. They might never work with you. They might not even live in the same area that you live in. That might help them out. It might give them a little bit more understanding than they had yesterday. So you're on marketing. You spend a lot of time, or you're on social media. You spend a lot of time putting this together for the benefit of other people. Do you have a favorite part of what you're doing with your marketing efforts? Is it social media? Is it writing articles? Is it just getting out there and talking about things that you really care about, like coffee? Like, what is your favorite part overall, just in marketing in general, as you run your business?
Well, you know, it's funny because it certainly has transformed over the 20 plus years that I've been in private practice. But in this current time, the thing that I find, I think, most rewarding, I like that I get comments, so I know that people are seeing it and it's helping them and it's causing them to think. So it's those little things that are being put on social media, I think, as well as blogs and such, which is part of that same avenue, I guess. It's nice to see that it is able to reach people, and, you know, maybe somebody that is just beginning to see a struggle in their child, or maybe it's even a struggle in themselves. They begin to process and go, really? That kind of sounds like me. Or that kind of sounds like, you know, little Johnny. And maybe I should be doing something about this. I hadn't thought about that before. Maybe that would make a difference over in this area where we're struggling. So that's what I like. It's just those little bits of getting out and touching people.
I agree with you. And sometimes it's not that obvious return that you might get from posting an article and someone calls you up and wants to be their client. It just doesn't work that way. When you take, when you're grateful for that, you can share something with someone else and they might take something from it and they gave you a comment, or you just know that people are taking something from it. I think that just, it goes a long way, and it keeps, I'm sure it keeps you going. I mean, just hearing your voice, and obviously, like we said before, we've talked to you quite a bit and worked with you quite a bit. It matters, you know, it's like it's very genuine. And I think it's important. And you also just brought up another point that I was going to get to. It might impact the individual. So it might be the adult, the business professional. We've talked a lot about kids and how it's affecting them in schools, but you also work with adults and business professionals that are, hey, maybe they're having a hard time keeping up, and they just, you know, maybe went, let's call it, undiagnosed for so many years, or didn't realize that maybe there's something going on that I could use some help with, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how are you
and,
working?
Yeah, go ahead. You know, well, I was just going to say, in talking about that 504, which is the civil rights, that's not age specific. So if you have someone, let's say, with ADHD in a work environment who is a great employee, but maybe they are just very disorganized, they may need an accommodation to try and help get them in a more organized fashion so that they, or systematic fashion, so that they can get their job done in a timely manner and maintain that ability to continue to perform within that company. Or there's oftentimes I have adults coming in, maybe sometimes even because their child has been identified, and they're saying that either they have an attention issue, or they feel like they've got a learning issue that's impacting them, and they want to take a look at, why is that, and what do I need to do about it? Because I've been struggling with this, or I've been putting extra time into this, or you know, I've been avoiding this when I didn't need to. As well as adults that are returning to school because, you know, they dropped out and decided not to finish college because it was so difficult for them, and they really want to pursue it. Maybe they're in their 30s or 40s now. So more and more I'm seeing adults being more mindful that these are possibilities out there for them and looking for help.
Yeah, well, I think the combination of that, what you just said, of adults being more mindful about this, and then it becoming more the norm to be open and into talking about this, and then having someone like you at the same moment when those two things come together and you shared some information, you put a piece of content out there that talked about it, that they're not alone in this, that there are business professionals out there mm-hmm. that are just not, maybe they're not keeping up as they should. They certainly have the capabilities. They just need to maybe, I don't know what the word would be, rewire it, or however they need to do it, have some help by someone like you that can get them to then, oh, now I can take the next level. It's those people that are putting that extra effort into it. I mean, I remember being in school, and I went to a school that, you know, had a certain way of teaching, and I didn't always take to that certain way of teaching. And it wasn't until my parents, got me some help outside of school that I started to realize, like, I needed to think about it and learn it a different way. You know, I needed to see it. I needed to hear it. I needed to kind of reteach it to myself. And it wasn't probably until my junior year that I started seeing that, and it's picked up, and then it hit in college. And then when I got out of college and post-college and going in my career, I saw that there's just different ways to do things, but you needed outside help. So I'm a person here that truly believes in it. I've done this with my own kids. And, you know, I just think it's important for people to realize that this exists out there, and there's a lot of people going through it, and it's amazing what it can do for you if you allow someone like yourself, Lori, to come into their lives and help them out, because it is so important. We spend so much of our time, you know, training our brain and learning and trying new things, and if you struggle with it, it's such an easy thing to just say, I can't do it, so I just shut it off, and that could lead to all sorts of different things. I'm sure you've seen this over the course of many years. So I appreciate, you know, first of all, what you do and what people in your profession do. And I think it's much needed. And I think there needs to be more conversation out there about it. That's why we love talking to you about this stuff and having you on our podcast to share your stories about it. So thank you very much for doing that. What I want to do is go into a little quick question, quick answer for you, with you, if that's okay. And then we'll find out the best way to get a hold of you and say goodbye. But if you were not an educational psychologist, what would you be doing?
Oh, goodness. That is such a hard one. it really is. I think that I probably would have landed in teaching. I was interested in teaching to begin with, and really, I decided not to do it because I didn't think I was very good at managing an entire classroom. I much prefer to go into a classroom now, look at what's going on, and give a teacher ideas. But there was a time for a long period. I thought I'd be a great kindergarten teacher, but at some point I decided I probably didn't have all those behavior management skills.
Well, it's self-awareness, right? To realize what you are good at and working one-on-one. And I think anytime we talk to an entrepreneur, I've said this before in the podcast, but it's all related. So the profession that someone else would pick is in a way closely related. And it goes back to your core message that you brought up, that it's about the kids. So if you're helping kids, it sounds like to me that you're happy. And of course, like we talked about, as if you're helping business professionals, just anyone else individually, you know, better themselves, I think you're feeling pretty good about yourself. We've talked about coffee. You live in an incredible area of Southern California. I'm sure you've gotten out and you like to travel as well. Do you have a favorite place that you like to travel to?
I would say not necessarily travel to, like, on a regular basis, but probably the one that I enjoyed and kind of sits in my head is Italy, when I went to Positano. Just overlooking, you know, the cliffs and overlooking the ocean is pretty amazing. And then right along with that same trip was Paris.
Well, there you
just
go.
Loved Paris. And would love to come back.
Yeah, and pretty good coffee over there too, right?
Oh my goodness, yes. Unfortunately, the food is incredibly good too.
That's right.
And so that kind of did me in.
Yeah. But I can understand someone.
Now,
like,
you know, closer in terms of our own country in the United States, I would go back to New York in a heartbeat. I loved that city, and I would go back there in a heartbeat.
Is it just the vibe you get and the energy that you get from the city and just all the different things you can do?
I think it's just that I think it's the visual. It's a place that is, first of all, I think I was fearful of New York when I was a kid because I thought, oh, it's a big city, it's dirty, all this stuff. It was beautiful. I loved it. It had so much going on, people moving, going, and just, I don't know. The vibe, I guess, is what I would say.
Yeah.
There's so much to see, and I have only barely scratched the surface.
Yeah. I just love how you have this, you see the good in everything. And so that's what I see, right? You see this child that might be developmentally delayed or whatever you want to call it, and you see children, you see New York City, whatever that might be, you find the best thing that you can possibly find in that, and you want to just take to it. And I think that's amazing. We need more of that. When was the moment you told yourself that you needed to make it happen and you gave yourself no excuses?
Well, I guess the way that I'm interpreting that question would be, or what comes to my mind was about a year ago, I decided that I had to move to that next level of making my business explode. It's always been a... just kind of here and working along and serving people, but, you know, kind of staying at a lower level. And about a year ago, I just decided it was time to either make it now as a, as more than just a little private practice, but make it more like a business, which is not in my wheelhouse. You know, I came out as a service provider, not a business person. And that's about that year ago is when I decided, okay, I was ready to bite the bullet and I needed to do the marketing and really try and reach those people, even in my community and in the communities that are, you know, kind of moving out from there, and let them know that this is out there and available because there's just too many people that don't know.
That's absolutely right. No, I think, yeah, any way you can interpret that question, I think you hit it perfectly. It's, we all make decisions as entrepreneurs, as business leaders, to say, when do we have to, what do I have to do? I need to take this to the next level, as you said. And you recognize that, and then you act on it. You know, there's a lot of people out there talking, and you just, and like you said, you have something, once you realize, and you knew this for a long time, you have something amazing to share with people, and what, they just have to know about it. And I think it's important. Like I said earlier on, I think people need to know that you exist, that other people like you exist, and you're there to help. So, Lori, I appreciate the time that you've given us, that you've shared with us. I think it's important. I know a lot of our listeners would love to hear this and will hear this. What is the best way someone can get a hold of you?
Well, obviously, by phone is always an easy way, and I will always talk with a person, and spend some time with them on the phone in order to try and determine what their need is and get them to the right place. So that's 661-255-2688. Or for those people, especially the millennials that, you know, really want to do everything through the computer, my website, loriadachi.com. And then you can email me even straight through there. So any of those ways work for me. And I'm more than happy to answer questions or talk with people.
Yeah, and I think we've talked about this before. Doing a phone consultation is important. So, you know, sometimes people might be intimidated and they don't want to do that. They don't want to come in right away, let's say. But they want to have that phone conversation. And I think that's just a great, you know, process that you have. So we can just talk on the phone and just see if there's a fit and see if you're the person and I'm the person on the other end that would work well together. So I think, like I said before, it's a great process.
And I don't have a receptionist. I have me. So either I will pick up the phone or I will be returning the call. So don't hesitate. I have no problem in talking with people. And if I'm not the right person, I can direct them to other people. Or sometimes I just direct people back into the school on, you know, what they need to do in order to get a process going.
No, I think that's fantastic. Well, Lori, thank you again for your time. We appreciate it. And we'll talk soon.
Okay, absolutely. Thank you, Eric.
Lori, it has been absolutely awesome having you on this podcast. From your thoughts on helping children in school to how adults can be more productive in their career, we are all better off from the time we spent with you. The perspectives from Lori on educational psychology are now perspectives you as a family person and business leader can use for yourself. And for that, Lori, thank you. And for anyone looking to talk to Lori about educational psychology, we encourage you to reach out to her. If you have questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or contact me on Twitter and Instagram at Eric_Kaz. Thank you for listening to our Kazsource podcast, Entrepreneurial Perspectives, Building and Protecting Your Business One Podcast at a Time. Until next time, we're out of here. This podcast exists in large part because of KazCM, the content marketing business inside Kazsource, Inc. KazCM is excited to bring the content marketing services used at Kazsource to you. Learn more by visiting kazcm.com. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It's a big deal to us. We hope you found value in it. And if you did, we would be incredibly grateful if you gave us a review on iTunes. Remember to subscribe to this podcast and feel free to share it with anyone you know. More than anything, thank you again for listening. We appreciate it.